You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who've already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Attention BetMGM customers. Have a friend who loves sports as much as you do? Here's a chance for both of you to earn a $50 bonus when they sign up through BetMGM's Refer a Friend program. Just sign into your BetMGM account and click on the Refer a Friend program to send your friend a message inviting them to register a new account in the same state you use BetMGM in. Once your friend signs up and makes a deposit, they'll receive a $50 bonus. And once your friend places a bet with their bonus and the wager is settled, you'll receive a $50 bonus as well. Share the excitement and get a $50 bonus every time you refer a friend to BetMGM. Visit BetMGM.com for terms and conditions. Must be 21 years of age or older to wager. Ohio only. New and existing customer offer. All promotions are subject to qualification and eligibility requirements. Rewards issued as non-withdrawable bonus bets. Bonus bets expire in 30 days. Please gamble responsibly. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
If you have a family relying on your income, you need life insurance. But finding the best quote shouldn't take a lifetime. That's where Policy Genius comes in. In minutes, Policy Genius could save you 50% or more simply by comparing quotes from America's top insurers. Once you apply, the Policy Genius team handles all the paperwork and red tape. To save on life insurance and get protection for you and your family, head to policygenius.com today.
For the ones standing guard, for the eagle-eyed, for the knights in shining armor, and for all those who support them, we are Grainger, your experienced safety partner, offering supplies and solutions for every industry, committed to helping keep your facilities safe and your people safer. Call, clickgrainger.com/safety, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
All right, Film Study is back. It is the Know Your Foe episode, so this is where we dig really deep into this upcoming game this weekend as the Ravens play the Chiefs on Sunday at 1 o'clock. Ken Michuzik, how you doing?
Life's good, Josh. How you doing?
I'm doing good. I am officially a Floridian now, as they cut up my Maryland driver's license and gave me a Florida one today.
Oh, my little boy's all grown up. Fantastic.
It's a little weird. I've never had never lived anywhere else, and now it's official, I guess.
There you go.
But we're not going to talk.
You're in a zero income tax state. I should be jealous already.
Yeah, any type of business stuff, podcast companies, it's all going to be based on this home. Section 336 and all is all going to be based in Florida, not Maryland, for that reason.
Very good.
All right, so, but we're not here to talk about Florida. We got to look at the Chiefs. I know there's a lot of people nervous with us going to Kansas City, a tough place to play. So we brought in someone who knows the Chiefs way better than all of us, Will Fight, who you can follow on Twitter at Big 12 Fan Will, where he goes on there and breaks down a lot of the Chiefs play and a whole lot more. Will, how you doing?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm doing well. All right, so this Sunday's a big game for, I believe it's the only, isn't it the only matchup of two 2-0 teams this Sunday?
I believe so, yes.
Right. So, and it's a team where there's, both teams have went through a lot of change in this offseason, and both have really big expectations, and the fan base expects a lot out of them. So, let's really get into the Chiefs and what we need to expect this season. Cam, you want to take it from here?
I'll be happy to. So the two hottest young quarterbacks in the game as of this exact moment in time, Lamar Jackson, Pat Mahomes. Pat Mahomes was there before the season started, certainly the consensus favorite to be the MVP of the entire league. Lamar Jackson has jumped into that spot now, not the MVP spot, but the second hottest young quarterback spot. With his play these first 2 weeks and 7-0 interceptions, the great quarterback rating, everything going right for the Ravens with a couple of lesser opponents they've beaten. Similarly, Kansas City has beaten a couple opponents that are not at the top of the league, but are certainly very solid wins in both cases. So, Will, how do you evaluate what's gone on so far with the Chiefs this season?
Well, the Chiefs this season, I would like to think, picked up where they left off at the end of last year, you know, that tragic ending of the AFC Championship game to the Patriots. But when it came down to Jacksonville week one, they early on, they looked like themselves again. The offense was continuing to play to the high standard we'd gotten accustomed to at the pretty much midway point of last season. And Patrick Mahomes is Patrick Mahomes. I think we all kind of know what that means now, but to be more specific, it's, he makes a lot of big plays when he can, and he's just always moving around, always looking. He always knows somewhere to get the ball. Now, with the loss of Tyreek Hill, that hurt. There's a lot of changes going on in that offense right now with that loss, but the offense seems to be doing exactly what it was doing last year. Now, when it comes to the defense, there's still a lot of issues there, especially in the secondary. Their ranking is a lot better so far this year. It's only been two games though. And, they're not looking as good as people want them to be, but they're not as bad as they were last year. But that is, you know, that's to come when you completely change your defensive schemes from Sutton to Spagnuolo.
All right. Well, let's talk about the offense first for one thing. I know the listeners want to hear about that high octane offense and what makes it so deep and scary, particularly at the receiving positions. So let's start with Mahomes again. What have you noticed from him this season? Maybe things that are different, areas of growth, what other teams are having to deal with that they didn't before?
So at the early part of the Jags game, week one, he looked very much like he did last season, where he was going to scramble around a lot. He was going to make quick decision throws. He had a no-look pass. He overthrew Travis Kelce. He was wide open in the end zone. Not a lot of Chiefs fans were happy about that decision. But he looked like he was going to do a lot of the same things. First half, he injures his ankle. He sprains his ankle in the red zone, going into the end zone. So we haven't seen a lot of his quick feet running around, scrambling like a madman style so far this year. He's staying in the pocket. He's having to read defenses in a solitary location. And I think that's helping him grow as a quarterback. He's not playing like he's in Cliff Kingsbury's Texas Tech offense anymore, where he's got Big 12 defenses flying around at him at all different angles. He's having to actually sit in the pocket and read. And then if he needs to make a quick cut forward, he can do it. But he's not going out of his way to run around and have to do something like make a left-handed throw.
You know, he's only once this year run the ball. He had a kneel, not counting that. But he's only once, that was in week one against the Jags, run the ball for 2 yards. So Patrick Mahomes, my recollection is in 2018, he was running for a few first downs.
Oh, yeah, running for a few first downs. He had that touchdown against Denver where he ran it in, dusted himself, and threw up the flex, as he likes to do when he celebrates. But, yeah, we're not seeing that this year. He's playing it really safe and making sure he doesn't put himself in harm's way. And it's a lot of that has to do, though, with the ankle injury that it's still lingering. You could tell that in Oakland last week.
All right. And as a passer, he's got some additional weapons this year, but Travis Kelce, of course, the biggest weapon of all, is still there. DeMarcus Williams. Sorry, do I have that right? DeMarcus Robinson, right?
DeMarcus Robinson, yes.
Yeah. has, I believe, the highest maybe yards per catch, but also yards per target in the entire NFL this year, which is a, obviously a category that I follow kind of closely. Over right around 20 yards or 21 yards per target, he's been thrown to, which is incredible when you think about it, that 20 yards per reception is very rare. Even early in the season, having 20 yards per target is remarkable.
Yeah, he's sitting at 24.6 right now, which that is, it's insane how high of a number that is just at week two. But that a lot of that comes from that Tyreek Hill injury and Andy Reid having to change things and find a new go-to option.
Normally a guy who has that kind of yards per reception total, though, doesn't catch 7 of 8 balls thrown his way. He catches
that's
7 of 14.
That's very true.
So that's very odd, and that's what I think really makes that so special. Let's go through the other kind of receivers one at a time, talk through them. Take your time on this. We aren't pressured by things. We like to do these in about an hour, but, you know, we go longer when we want to.
Okay. Well, just to quick go back to DeMarcus Robinson, he's got speed, and he's 6'1". He's got that height. But his notable thing about him is he can make a lot of quick cuts that other guys in that wide receiver core can't do. I think the only person in that core that can do what he does is Tyreek Hill, just because of the speed and agility he has. Gardy kind of covered a lot of him, though, so I'll move on to Sammy Watkins.
You see, DeMarcus lines up mostly on the outside, mostly at the slot.
Right now, he's been mostly lining up on the outside. They have been tinkering with him in the slot a little bit, but right now, they've been putting Sammy Watkins and then Mecole Hardman in the slot more. At least they did in Oakland during the Jags game. They weren't really sure where they were going to put him. They were still trying to figure that out with Hill being out. But Watkins, you know, he runs a 4.43. He's really quick. All these guys are quick. That's the that's the main thing about this wide receiver group is just how fast they are. Watkins has been really quick off the line this year. He's looking a lot like he did about 3 years ago. He's looking fresh. He's been played with injury over the last few years, and that's really hurt him, but he's looking a lot better and a lot fresh, a lot healthier is, I guess, the best way to put it. You know, what you saw what he did in Jacksonville, and we didn't get that in Oakland. We didn't see the same thing, but that's because other people decided to show up, that being DeMarcus Robinson. The third guy, the wide receiver three on this team right now, is Mecole Hardman. Mecole Hardman is, you know, first round pick out of Georgia. He's small, like Tyreek is. I think Tyreek's about 5'9". Mecole's 5'10". He runs a 4.33, which is not far off of what Tyreek Hill runs. When he was drafted, a lot of people in our fan base were saying, you know, this is the guy that we drafted just in case the Tyreek Hill situation goes really bad. And he's pretty much, that's what he is. He's here to be here just in case something goes wrong with Tyreek. And what do you know? It did. So last week he's getting into the groove of things, and I don't want to call him Tyreek 2 yet. We're not there yet, but there were some moments where you could just see it. You could see his speed is going to be something you really have to worry about in the same capacity as Tyreek Hill. It's just right now he's not as experienced, but over the offseason, Mecole and Patrick Mahomes worked out a lot when Tyreek could not be at the facility. And you could see that. You can see there's a good connection between those two when it comes to the abilities that Mecole Hardman has. That being said, go ahead.
I'm sorry. I just want to say it's always good for a young receiver to take that opportunity when it's given to go play catch with a quarterback. You really want to do that. Work out, catch, whatever. I cannot possibly understand, even if you dislike the guy personally, not attempting to make that connection at that level. It's a huge mistake. I mean, hey, football players are young men. Young men make mistakes. It's a normal thing in life, but that's something I just hopefully people would get the right coaching from their agent at least to do that right.
Oh, yeah, and especially in Hardman's situation, it's like, if I was his agent, you got to be like, look, we don't know what's happening with Tyreek. They drafted you because of that. You need to go work out with Patrick Mahomes. You need to go work out with the MVP all summer. You guys need to be on one just in case you get that opportunity. And here we are. He does have that opportunity now, and he's got a chance to become a big weapon, as we really don't know when Tyreek's coming back.
Yeah. There's a couple things about this receiving core that are very intriguing. One is, obviously, they all have speed. One of the things that goes with speed and has not really worked out until these last couple of games, I'll say, is running your route after your route. So you get to the end of the route, and a quarterback like Mahomes, and also like Jackson now, has a lot of escapability, a lot of ability to extend plays, and you want to know what you can do to find space that's probably of a non-traditional manner, because Mahomes can end up on the right side of the field, as often you do at the end of an extended play, and then there are the rule set that'll go with three guys on the sideline at that point. But the key to me is really, where else on the field can you be? Because all of the defenders understand those rules very well as well, and you really need to try and find somewhere else to find space on that field and let your quarterback work his magic, even if that is breaking the golden rule of throwing back across his body, risking the interception.
Yeah, and that's something that this core had to learn pretty quick last season, and they got really good at it, you know, like you said, in the middle and late of the year. But the problem, it's not really a problem, but something I've noticed is that the defenses are figuring that out too, and they realize that they have to stay on their toes and make sure that they follow these guys as much as they can, because if one guy has an inch and a half of space ahead of him, Pat's going to hit him. He's going to try his best to do it, and he might not always do it. He might overthrow him, but that window, if it's small or if it's large, he's going to try his best to get it there. And he did it against the Raiders. He fit a ball into Hardman. There was maybe an inch of space between those two corners, and he just dropped it in his lap, and he went down and he got it, and the play was ultimately called back, and it was 3rd and 20 after that, and then he threw a touchdown pass. But, you know, that's another thing you just got to worry about. It's just you can't give him a little bit of space, and the people are just running around like madmen half the time when Pat gets on his horse and starts running around.
Well, one of the things in listening to the Ravens games down the stretch, we got Tony Romo a lot as the broadcast guy. He did the game at Kansas City, and what you're describing happening at the end of the play, the 4th and 9 play where Tyreek Hill was effectively covered by Mosley, which is no coverage at all for Hill. Mosley's fine cover linebacker, but he wasn't the guy for Hill. And, you know, it could not sustain itself. But he made the point that you really need to run more cover zero in that situation, or maybe a cover one. But anyway, more assets into the pass rush against a quarterback like Mahomes to at least force him to throw the ball quickly when he might be a little uncomfortable, as opposed to having all day to let his receivers run like crazy until they find open space.
Yeah, no, it's just a really interesting thing that you keep seeing more and more, and as these more athletic quarterbacks keep coming out. I mean, for example, Lamar Jackson has become that type of guy, especially these last two games too. I mean, I'll be honest, I haven't had a chance to watch the Ravens as much as I'd like. I mean, I have Lamar Jackson as my fantasy quarterback, so I gotta check in as much as I can. But, you know, the Chiefs are on. So
right, sure, I understand that. He's certainly been dropping in dimes, and if you're like me, you don't get to watch a lot of the rest of the league, because then you're breaking down film on the Chiefs probably after the Chiefs are off, right?
Oh, yeah, and I'm just constantly making sure I know exactly what we're going to do. And it sucks. It really does at times, especially when you love the game as much as, mm-hmm. as guys like us do. And but when you love your team even more, you know, it makes it even more worthwhile.
All right. Outstanding. So let's move on a little bit. I mean, the wide receiver core being what it is terrific. How about Travis Kelce? Has anything changed this year? I mean, obviously he's getting a little older. He's going to be 30 in a couple of weeks now, right?
Yeah, I believe it's in the next few weeks. If it's next month, I'm pretty mm-hmm. sure. Well, we saw last year, Travis Kelce slowed down a bit later on in the year, and no one really could seem to figure out why. It was later discovered that he had been injured. He'd hurt something in his ankle or in his foot, and he had a walking boot on for a lot of the summer. And we're kind of seeing a lingering effect from him. He has 195 yards receiving this year so far, which is, you know, he's second to Sammy Watkins. Mm-hmm. But that's the type of guy he is. I mean, you just get him the ball and over the middle, and he's pretty much going to run it for maybe another 15. He can pretty consecutively do that and pretty consistently do that. Just because there's not a lot of linebackers right now that can stay with him. He's got he's kind of got freaky speed for his size.
That's the talk in Baltimore this week is how do you cover Travis Kelce, whether it's put one of two safeties in his face, whether that is Tony Jefferson or potentially Anthony Levine, who did a really good job in the last drive of the game against Njoku that sealed the AFC North for the Ravens. I want to make one point about Kelce, though, and then I'm sorry to cut you off, but easier to do 2 points right here. Kelce, before the opener against Jacksonville, when he had only 3 catches for 88, had 15 consecutive games of 5 or more catches, which is just – I've never heard of that from a tight end. I'm sure it might have happened before, but, you know, he had 103 catches last year. That's astounding to me that it was since the opener of 2018 when the Chargers held him to 1 catch for 6 yards, he had at least 5 in every single game the remainder of 2018.
And see, and that's part of where the coverage issue comes. This is an example of you can't find a lot of linebackers to cover him. And what a lot of teams end up trying to do is they have an outside linebacker stay on him early, and then they'll just play zone and combo off, and then bring a safety up to try to finish the job. And a lot of teams have to double him. He opens a lot of holes in coverage too. So when you double him up, then suddenly it's Sammy Watkins is open or Robinson's open, or in a lot of cases last season, Tyreek suddenly wide open, which is what a lot of teams tried to reduce at late down the stretch. But that's just the great thing about Kelce, and what I think makes him one of the right now. I think he's the best tight end in the league. With Gronk being retired, it's just because he creates a lot of damage in the secondary, no matter what he's doing, catching passes or just running downfield. And then he can also do his darndest to block someone when he really needs to, because he has that speed and he can get downfield. And suddenly he's 5 yards in front of the guy who caught the ball, and he's hitting guys and making them fly around. And next thing you know, you got a touchdown.
All right. All right, we love our guy here in Baltimore too. Just to put his name out there, but this episode is about the Chiefs. So Mark Andrews is almost 13 yards per target this year, so he's having a great year. He's caught 16 out of 17 balls. Let's move on here, and I guess we should talk about the running backs. There's no more Kareem Hunt. Tell us about what's going on at running back this year for the Chiefs.
So Kareem Hunt. The loss of Kareem Hunt, it really hurt a lot of people. For obvious reasons, the reason we had to cut him, and then the fact that we'd lost him, just was a really scary thing to Chiefs fans and people who just wanted to know what are we going to do. So who do we have now? It took us a long time to find a Jamaal Charles replacement, who was what you could say is the last great Chiefs running back. Great being a subjective term that you could use depending on the year. But Damian Williams really showed up when he was given his chance. And that's the main reason we extended him in the offseason after trying his best to be what Kareem was throughout most of last season. Then you add LeSean McCoy, and you kind of have an interesting running back combo of, you've got Damian Williams, who can, be the guy who runs the out and catches the ball and runs all over the place, but can also run up the middle and be quick. And then you have LeSean McCoy being the more traditional style running back who can kind of just run through people if he needs to, but he can make a quick cut as well. But something that Ravens fans need to really look at before the game and just kind of keep an eye out on is that they're both questionable this week. Mm-hmm. LeSean McCoy has an ankle problem, and Damian Williams has a knee problem, neither of which ended the game last week. Neither one of them finished the full game. So that would leave it to Darwin Thompson and Daryl Williams as the other two options, which even Chiefs fans don't even have any information on those guys. We're pretty much in the dark as we just have preseason stuff and minimal preseason stuff at that. If I had to pick one guy to play, though, it would probably be LeSean McCoy. With that extension to Damian Williams, I think, in it being a knee thing, I'd expect if we're going to sit one of them, it'd be him.
You're just handicapping who will play, not who you'd prefer to play, which probably be McCoy.
No, actually, I'd prefer Damian Williams, honestly. I think he fits with the style of this offense that we run right now. I think LeSean McCoy is a great Andy Reid running back, but more to the style of Andy Reid in Philadelphia and Andy Reid with early on in Kansas City. Alex Smith's Andy Reid era. Patrick Mahomes' offense, you need a guy that can be really quick like Damian Williams can. So I'd prefer Damian Williams. I don't have a problem with Shady playing. I'd be happy either way, but he only got like, when I say when before he got out, he only had like 8 yards rushing last week.
That was Damian Williams.
It was Damian Williams.
Yeah, McCoy had 11 for 23. Damian Williams, 9 carries for 8 yards.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I had it flipped. Yeah. Yes, you are correct. Yeah. But before Damian came out, the running back situation is very frustrating to me, as I'm sure you can kind of tell, just because I'm still upset about Kareem Hunt.
Sure.
And how that went down. But I mean, Damian's a great player, and I prefer Damian just because of the quick ability to just be quick on the outside and dump the ball off to him if we really need to. And that just doesn't seem like something LeSean's really ready to do in our offense.
Okay. Well, I mean, he's averaging almost 10 yards a catch, so he's certainly done a lot of that. But the question I had for you, Damian Williams now has rushed the ball 22 times for 34 yards this year, 1.5 per carry. His long run of the year is only 6 yards. Is that more a function of Williams and his decisiveness, ability to get to the hole, anything like that? Or is it more the offensive line?
I think a lot of it has to do with the offensive line. We've had a lot of offensive line issues this year. Point example, Eric Fisher being out now. He played one play last week. Our right side is good. It's a good right. Our right side is one of the better right side offensive lines in football. It's from the middle on over to Eric Fisher where I've always had issues with it. And a lot of fans have had issues with it. Eric Fisher was never what we thought he was going to be. He still isn't. And now him being out really puts us in a bind. The offensive line, I think, tried their very best last week, but it's going to be more of the same this week where if you pressure that left side, something is going to happen in your favor just because of the, I don't want to say lack of ability, but just less experience.
Probably cohesiveness issues on the left side as well, with these guys are not played together too much.
Exactly. And I'm drawing a blank. I'm sorry, but left tackle, who's playing left tackle now? See, it's just an example that I really don't even know him that well. Last time he played,
I'm sorry, Cam Irvin,
yes. Yeah. Cam Irvin, the last time Cam Irvin played left tackle was Patrick Mahomes' first start in Denver week 17 and two seasons ago. And then he played left tackle last week. And so this will be his first start since then. And that's he's more of a left guard. And it's just something that I just don't really like him playing left tackle, but he has to. And that's just the fact of the matter. And, you know, being a former offensive lineman myself, you know, didn't really play anywhere big, just played high school football. But understanding how offensive linemen work, it can be hard to move from guard to tackle. It's especially so probably in the NFL where you're, instead of dealing with defensive tackles, you're dealing with quick ends and occasionally the outside linebacker. Those guys are fast.
Along those lines, I just wanted to say that you guys stole Greg Sinnott from us this week in terms of a waiver claim. I love that guy in terms of he's an absolute prototype left tackle build, length, size, feet, all of it. And, you know, has the quickness you probably want at that position. He has not yet put it together at the NFL level, played in a very small program at Wagner. But I'm not surprised, but if you have Cam Irvin and Greg Sinnott, and those are your two choices to start at left tackle, I might choose, if you're going to play Irvin somewhere else anyway, to just disrupt one position, play Sinnott, and then maybe you have something on the upside. Now, of course, Sinnott just got there a day or two ago, so he's not going to know the system, and he's not going to know, you know, all of the calls, so it's too soon. But I would be I thought it was a savvy pickup by the Chiefs. I'm really sad that the Ravens weren't able to get him back on their own practice squad. Actually, I'm very, very sad that they took the chance on letting him go. So I think you've got a guy who could potentially be very good. And he's a product of DaCosta's small school scouting, which has been, you know, traditionally very, very good. And so he's really a guy.
Yeah, and I'd have to agree with you. I've done a little bit of research on him. I haven't gotten into him deeply. Haven't really had a chance to. But from what I could tell, you're spot on, and I think he's going to be a good addition, especially if Eric Fisher ends up being out a lot longer than we expect.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. All right. Well, terrific. So let's go across that offensive line, because that's certainly something we want to take some time to talk about. So you mentioned Irvin's at left tackle. Fisher is out. We know about Sanat at left tackle. Who's now at left guard?
Oh, I don't have that written down in front of me. Give me one second.
Sure thing.
It is
Wiley, perhaps?
Wiley at left guard. Ritter at center.
Mm-hmm.
Austin Ritter's at center, and then we have
Duvernay Tardif.
Yeah, we got the Canadian doctor at right guard, and then we got Mitchell Schwartz at right tackle.
Okay.
So, I mean, Wiley's been doing well. Could be better, but there's a lot of things about our offensive line that could be better.
Okay. All right. Well, fair enough. Mitchell Schwartz, one of the best right tackles in the game at this point, I think, is the general consensus, right?
Oh yeah, definitely. And Mitchell Schwartz is just a guy you can lean on, especially if you're trying to go to that right side or if you're having to play up against someone like Von Miller.
Now the Chiefs, do they run a lot of power to the right side? Are they primarily a right-handed team in terms of how they run their power schemes or pull a guard?
They run that right side power. You won't see a lot of pulling guards. When it comes to running the ball, you will see a lot of running in between the tackles, though. You'll see a lot of going off of the Canadian doctor right away, right up the middle. Mm-hmm. You get him because he's reliable. Last year when we lost him, we had to run a little bit more to the outside. And but when you have a guy, when you had a guy like Tyreek Hill, and then in this case, Mecole Hardman, you can run a lot of plays where you're going to run outside with them and just do a quick pitch to them as they come in motion. So you're going to be running off of Schwartz a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And that's really why we love him at where he is just making sure that we can run off of him right away. And we always usually can. He's always very reliable in that sense.
Oh, we were talking a little bit before the show about this, but they occasionally play two tight ends per play. Two tight ends on a play. So 1.23 tight ends per play, 1.13 running backs per play, which means they use a fullback occasionally. And they may use additionally a tight end as a fullback. I'm not really capturing that with this. But 2.59 wide receivers per play. There's still a fairly heavy 11 personnel team in terms of what they put on the field. Is that what they would typically run out of?
You will see, yeah, a lot of 11 personnel running. You'll occasionally even see a 21 personnel run. It's very rare, but you will see it. We do like to use a fullback. Anthony Sherman is one of the great fullbacks in the league right now. So you'll get a lot of situations where he will be on the field. When it comes to two tight ends, you'll see a lot of 12 personnel. You'll see a lot of now. It used to be, he's on the Browns now. He played a lot last night, or Monday night. But you'll see a lot of Blake Bell now out of Oklahoma, okay. former quarterback turned tight end in his last year at OU. He's used to those quick style of offenses. He's seen it. He's run it. So he does a really good job at being the blocking tight end to Kelsey's catching tight end.
Kelsey, in terms of, is he split wide more often? Because that's what the Ravens do with Andrews now. I'm just wondering.
Yeah, he's split wide a lot. They move him out wide a lot more now. But he's not unfamiliar to having his hand down the line and making sure he can hop off the line and power off.
All right, very cool. All right, well, anything else about the offense in terms of maybe scheme, formation, things they like to do that are maybe a little bit unusual that Ravens fans wouldn't know about already?
Not really. The Ravens and the Chiefs do run a lot of similar formations. They kind of have that spread style of new NFL offenses. They will go under center. You'll see a lot of pro and pro tight, but they're usually in the spread gun or ace gun. You'll very rarely see Patrick Mahomes back there by himself, especially this year with the ankle problems. If they're going to make sure everyone runs downfield for a pass, they're usually going to have a running back there to block at least.
Let me make sure we understand terminology here. And these are terms that I think I'm familiar with, but spread gun is five wide with only a shotgun quarterback. Ace gun, you don't necessarily mean the pistol. It's one back left or right of a quarterback in the shotgun, right?
Yes, but you will see some of that pistol. They will have the pistol where I can't remember the terminology of it off the top of my head. I usually have to write it down. Where you'll have a running back behind Patrick Mahomes, and you'll have Sherman on his side, and mm-hmm. they'll move him to different sides. And then even in some instances, you'll have a Tyreek Hill type wide receiver there on his side as well. And they'll move around and, you know, RPO it and figure out where they're going to go as the play develops.
Mm-hmm. Very good. Very good. Okay. Well, if you're ready, we'll move on to the defense a little bit.
Of course.
Maybe talk a little bit about the most common base looks for the Chiefs and what they most commonly line up with. The personnel package and then any other thing you want to talk about with regard to it.
Well, so you're going to see pretty much always a 4-3 base. It's very unlikely that they move out of that now since the change from 3-4. I'm going to be very honest, and I'm very bad at defensive packaging and everything like that. I'm more of an offensive-minded guy, so... you'll see a lot of cover four and man when it comes to coverage. Spagnuolo really likes to run cover three or Tampa two when it comes to zone. That's pretty much. But you have pointed out, we talked about it earlier, nickel almost all the time this year. And okay. a lot of that comes from the weakness of our secondary right now. A lot of lesser known guys, you know, you got the Kendall Fullers and the Tyrann Mathews, but the other guys are still trying to develop them and prove themselves in this secondary.
Okay. And I noticed that in each game, the Chiefs had kind of given up a fair amount of rushing yardage. And I'm trying to find it here again now and not having success. But against the Raiders, I noticed that Jacobs really went off with a big game of about 8 yards a carry or so. And in the previous game against Jacksonville, Fournette had a decent game. He might have had 5 yards a carry, or the Jacksonville's team might have had 5 yards a carry. So that's, you know, obviously in neither of those games did either team, were they in a position to keep running the ball for a long time, because the Chiefs got a big lead in both games in the first half, you know, and down 14, 18 points, whatever it was in each of those games, they really couldn't maintain a running game. But when they did it, they were fairly effective. Is there, when you look at that, are there reasons for that? The Chiefs have some weakness either at linebacker or on the defensive line in terms of controlling gaps that might lead you to that kind of a conclusion?
So really the main issue right now when it comes to our run game is the secondary. And I know that sounds odd, but we had one of the worst secondaries in the league last year, and teams are continuing to try our secondary and throw the ball. So you're getting a lot of linebackers in coverage just in case. And they're not getting a lot of blitzes, and they're not really trying to push. The new 4-3 defensive line is really just trying to mesh and figure out how they're going to play together. Mm-hmm. A lot of that is where that stems from.
Would you expect a lot of four-man pass rush come Sunday against the Ravens?
Yes, I would. You're going to see a few blitz packages. You're never going to see any corner blitzes, mainly because we need those guys in the secondary, because our secondary is just so it's bad right now. And it's not good. It's not terrible. It's just bad right now. And you're going to see a lot of Chris Jones trying to make plays. He got his first sack last week. You're gonna see Emmanuel Ogba and Alex Okafor trying to make plays, but of course the main force in our defensive ends right now is Frank Clark. Mm-hmm. Frank Clark has really been showing up, and he's been doing his best in this new system. When it comes to linebackers, Anthony Hitchens is playing really well. Darren Lee and Damian Wilson are also trying their very hardest to make disrupt the run game when they can, if they're not in trying to cover tight ends or wide receivers over the middle. Reggie Ragland has not played at all this season. There's some talks that he is in the there's a chance he's on the move.
He's in the doghouse right now, or is there another problem there that we haven't heard about yet?
It's looking like it's more of a problem we're not sure of. Mm-hmm. But he's been inactive the last 2 weeks, but he hasn't been injured to my knowledge. Stretch. Yeah, and with this Jalen Ramsey thing going on, there's been talks of him being included in a deal for Jalen Ramsey, which mm-hmm. was then kind of disputed, saying that the Jaguars didn't want Reggie Ragland. I think the main issue is just finding a place for him in this new style of defense. We know we need him as a middle linebacker, but right now we just not really sure where to put him. And I think he's frustrated, and that's probably where a lot of that inactiveness comes from. But then again, I could be entirely wrong, and it could be injury related as well that they're just not disclosing.
Okay, so Ragland, this is his third year in the league now, and I'm forgetting exactly if he was a first-round pick, second-round pick. Where was he selected when he was originally drafted?
I cannot recall either.
Okay, that's okay.
He was second-round, 41st pick for the Bills in 16. Yes, in 16.
So he was hurt all of 16, because I'm looking at his overall stats and he only played in 17 and 18. That's interesting. So he's an RFA after this year.
Yeah.
Sorry, a free agent after this
year. Yes, he's a free agent after this year.
Yeah. Interesting. Wow, I had no idea he'd been in the league that long. That's very surprising. Okay. So that's not working out, unfortunately. So how about the other linebackers and what have they done?
Well, you're going to see a lot of good play out of Darren Lee and Damian Wilson to the best of their abilities. You have Darren Lee has only started one game, but he's only had one solo tackle, but three assists. But Damian Wilson is the one who's really standing out with seven solo tackles. Mm-hmm. And then Hitchens has nine. So though that Darren Lee's really not the one you're going to see flying off the outside to make a big tackle, you're going to see him kind of staying back a little bit. That's very apparent there. But Hitchens and Wilson are the main guys you're going to see pressing the running game. Hitchens and Leonard Fournette really got into it during that Jags game, as well as everyone else on those two teams. As much fighting those two teams had. But Hitchens is the main run blitzer. He's going to be the one that flies in the middle. He's going to be coming off the outside. And the interesting way that they're doing that the linebackers right now is they're moving them around a lot, just kind of based on where people are lined up. So while Hitchens is their middle, sometimes you will see him lined up on the outside just because of the way they have their matchup. And that was where a lot of the Fournette issues were coming from. They kind of picked up that they were going to run to the outside with Fournette, so they kind of flipped Hitchens and Wilson, or Hitchens and Lee, and Hitchens would come around and tackle him and make a big hit.
All right, well, let's move on to the secondary then. And, you know, the five guys, I don't know that you went through all the names of Breland, Ward, Fuller at corner, and the safeties, the Honey Badger and Thornhill. They played every snap last week that I saw. So it looked like they played exclusively the nickel from what I can tell. And I don't see any other snaps. Make sure I'm looking at the right game here. Yeah, this is the Kansas City-Oakland game. So they had five defensive backs. Well, four defensive backs who played all 62 snaps. Another defensive back who played 46 snaps. And another free safety who played 13. So it sounds like they basically split. They had a nickel pretty much every play for the whole game. Maybe a few base defense snaps in that time. So, tell us a little bit about, in terms of quality of play, what kind of plays these guys have made for some of the big guys from between Breland and Ward in particular.
So, if I'm going to have to pick someone between Breland and Ward, who's been standing out the most, it would have to be Rashaan Breeland. Breeland's really upped his game these last 2 weeks. He's been making a lot of key deflections when he can. Ward has just kind of been there. He can show up when he's really needed, but it's more often than not that Breeland is the main guy is there to disrupt things. They both have interceptions. They're both the only two interceptions out of the secondary, other than Frank Clark, who had that against the Jags. But Breeland's just kind of been the guy where he's kind of hanging out over the middle. He's going to be there, and if you try to test him, he's going to at least try his best to get a hand in someone's face.
Okay. All right, very interesting. It does look like Charvarius Ward is getting more of the targets this year. There's definitely a lot more attempt to throw at him of the Chiefs receivers. And I don't know if that means he's covering a number one guy typically, or maybe he's, do they play a strict left corner, right corner, where they don't typically follow receivers? And you have the corners are on one side of the field at the time, or do they typically trail number one
they
corner?
They typically trail. You'll see more often than not, you're going to see Kendall Fuller following the top receiver. Okay. So when it comes to Ward, it's more of it's a weakest link type of thing. The teams realize that out of those three corners, he's the guy that you're going to test a lot. And the more you test him, the more likely he is to break.
Okay, very good. Very good. Okay, and how about the safeties? The Honey Badger, has he been everything they thought? Obviously, you guys paid a lot of money, outbid the Ravens, who supposedly wanted him.
To be honest, no. He hasn't really been what we expected, but that's not entirely his fault. He hasn't had a lot of opportunities to. Teams are kind of avoiding him as much they can. And if they see Juan Thornhill there, they're going to go there instead of trying to test the Honey Badger. He did have a really bad pass interference call early on in the Raiders game that helped set up that touchdown.
Mm-hmm.
But that's really the only issues we've had with him. The main problem has just been that teams are just avoiding him at all costs, and he's having to do his best to be there when he's on the opposite side of the field or he's just away from the play.
Okay, I mean, that's I look at that as, for a safety, a very good thing. If they're not throwing at him, then he's doing his job. He would have probably been the free safety for the Ravens after Weddle had left, but before they signed Earl Thomas. And I think he's always really played better in his career when he's been a slot corner. So that's at Arizona, he was terrific in that role. But I think he wanted a career change himself and to move to free safety. And maybe that's where, I don't know if they've been using him close to the line of scrimmage and, you know, moving him up and back kind of at will to get in the player, whether he plays deep most of the time.
It's been very rare that you will see him up close to the line of scrimmage. They're keeping him back to limit deep plays and kind of scare offenses from having to throw there.
Makes a lot of sense. That's definitely the way that Thomas is used here in Baltimore now. All right. What else do we need to talk about in terms of the defense? Anything in terms of offensive or defensive game plan that you would maybe expect going in against a team like the Ravens that brings, certainly a running game that has not been the focus, but a lot of offensive weapons, I think, that are diverse now, that they're more willing to either run or pass. Anything maybe in terms of attacking the Ravens defense, which has definitely shown some weaknesses this year. Game plan wise, what do you expect from the Chiefs?
Well, I'm going to start with defense since we've been talking about it here most recently. I think the Chiefs' best option, and I think what they'll try to do, is to make sure you shut down the Ravens' running game and try to contain Lamar Jackson as much as you can. Like, we all know that the Chiefs' secondary is not the best in the league. And when you have a Mark Andrews or a Hollywood Brown, one of those guys is going to get through, and it's going to happen. We're going to get torched in more than one situation. So as long as we can make sure to stop the run, I feel a little bit better. And I think the coaching staff in Kansas City will feel a little bit better about those secondary issues. As long as we make sure that, Ingram does not run all over us, or Lamar Jackson doesn't run all over us, okay, every now and then having a deep play happen through the passing game, that's okay, as long as we make sure that you do not run through us. You can you can go over us, but don't run through us.
Yeah,
when it comes to offense, though, I think you're just going to see a lot of the same things you guys are going to do to us. It's just you're going to want to have a lot of big plays in the passing game, especially with the running back situation being a little iffy. That's not surprising with the skill set of Patrick Mahomes.
Mm-hmm.
So he can throw the ball far and he's going to do it. He can throw the ball short and he's going to do it. He can fit it in tight windows and he's going to do it. This week, I think they're going to try to go to Robinson a lot more as the same that they did last week, just to draw the secondary off of Sammy Watkins. Sammy Watkins didn't have, you know, as big of a week as he did the first week, because everyone saw that first week and said, like, okay, now we have to cover Sammy. And it's, okay, now we have to cover DeMarcus Robinson. So you might also even see a lot of Mecole Hardman getting in there, you know, on screens, doing a lot of what Tyreek would do, not to the capacity of Tyreek, just to get Sammy Watkins open and get him there in space. And then also open up the secondary to where you have a situation where Travis Kelce's one-on-one with someone who has no business really guarding him,
right.
to put it that way. He's going to try to disrupt it like he usually does, and that'll also be used to get Sammy Watkins open, who is now our top choice when it comes to wide receivers.
Yeah, it's an interesting game because both these teams have just too many weapons to cover everything. And I definitely would agree. It's a challenge looking across in terms of the Chiefs receivers to figure out how you line up. I personally think you have to try your best to put one man and one safety probably lined up in man coverage against Kelce and hope for the best. And you know, it's Kelce's caught 10 of 17 balls this year. They're doing something right. I don't know whether it's double coverage because I haven't really looked at the tape. I don't know whether they're covering him effectively with a man. But the one guy on the team, and he's best probably at this of all the things he does, is Jefferson in terms of covering a man, covering a tight end in man coverage. He really, that was something he did well at Arizona before he even came to Baltimore. He's been rarely used in that role here, but it seems like a natural kind of a fit for this kind of situation. Because you have to figure out, how do you economize on resources versus at least one of these receivers to try and otherwise play some sort of meaningful defense against the rest of that team? Whether it's you want to bake into a spy on Mahomes or Jackson for that matter, or you want to have some opportunity to double cover receivers on the outside and pick a side of the field, you know, whatever it's going to be.
No, yeah, and I completely agree with you in that. You pretty much hit the nail on the head, especially when it comes to the spy. Even if it's you know, Lamar Jackson or Patrick Mahomes, you're going to have to do it on either side of either team this week to help limit the possibility of big plays.
All right. How about we do this? We'll pick. I don't like to do scores with people we have on the show, but how about you pick one player who you think matches up particularly well against the Ravens, and maybe I'll pick one Raven I think matches up particularly well against the Chiefs.
Well, I think my one player will have to be Travis Kelce. I think Travis Kelce is going to be a big asset for the Chiefs this season, or not this season, this week. When we're still trying to figure out who our top guys are to go to when it comes to the passing game in the wide receiver core. I mean, it's obvious that you have Sammy Watkins as the one wide receiver, but having Travis Kelce there to cause a lot of disruptions, making sure he gets open, even breaking that double coverage to make big plays is going to be really important. His most memorable catch this season was last week in Oakland, where he was double covered going into the end zone. He disrupted it enough that he caught the ball and made it and scored and got a touchdown through two guys. So that's what you're going to want to make sure to excuse me. That's what you're going to want to make sure to continue to do and even get more of this week, as you're not going to also have the running game to rely on. You're going to have to rely on your wide receivers. And then Travis Kelce is kind of his own little, he's not part of the receivers, this receiving core this week. He's part of himself. You have to get the Travis Kelce position figured out.
Mm-hmm. That's a very realistic. I mean, obviously, is the first player you game plan when you face the Chiefs. My one guy is going to be Marquise Brown, and it's not necessarily, I think Marquise Brown is going to go off on the Chiefs for a big game this week like he has. I think the Chiefs probably, if anything, will be forced to put additional defensive assets on him, maybe put the safety on that side of the field or shade that way so that they have that over-the-top coverage and they're trying to not get beaten by big plays there. And then I think that'll open up some options for other Ravens receivers in this one, whether it's Boykin, Andrews, other players who also could do some damage. But so far, Marquise Brown has been almost 13 yards a target on the year, and he's certainly been one of the exciting stories at the beginning of the NFL. So anyway, look forward to a great game. This is just a fantastic discussion. I appreciate going through this with you. We're going to do a little bit of mailbag here. I hope we have a couple things about the Chiefs and people wanting to learn about that. And what do we got, Josh?
All right. Big news for the Chiefs today is Eric Fisher going out in this core muscle surgery. Clearly, the Ravens defense plays one where they're going to put some pressure on Mahomes. And how much does losing Eric Fisher hurt?
I have to say it does hurt a lot. I think I kind of said earlier, Cam Irving, he does not have a lot of experience at that left tackle position. That being said, he did his best last week. He's had the experience of it. He's gotten a full week of practicing with that squad in that position. I mean, he got some time practicing last week in that position in preparation of Eric Fisher not playing. So the left side is gonna be a real iffy situation for us, and it's gonna be something that the Ravens try their very best to disrupt and get through and make sure that they are all over Mahomes' blind side as much as they can. But overall, as I think about it more, as Cam Irving might not be as experienced, I think it's not going to be as bad as I probably made it out to be earlier on. But at the same time, losing someone, even though he's not as good as most people realize, but he comes up in a lot of clutch spots, losing Eric Fisher is going to hurt for this game and going forward.
All right, and then one more question for you from the mailbag is about Arrowhead and what makes Arrowhead such a tough stadium. We hear all the time about the noise in Arrowhead is there and all that, and the announcers, you know, everyone likes to hype up. It's hard to come to Kansas City and win. What makes it such a tough place?
Oh, I love this question. I love Arrowhead. So when it comes to Arrowhead, it's just the fact that our fan base is just so ravenous when it comes to our team. We take a lot of pride in that loudest stadium in the world record we hold, and every week we try to break it. So I think that's what a lot of that noise issue comes from. The fact that we're good, to say the least, is a huge aspect of what it is now. Going into Arrowhead is just very intimidating because they always like to bring back former greats to hit the drum. We have a big drum we love to hit on, and we get everybody hyped up. They've moved that up into the upper deck now instead of on the field, so people will literally be sitting there next to it as they're hitting it. Everyone just goes crazy. That's really the best way to explain it. I really don't know how to explain why that is, other than the fact that we just love the team. For the Ravens this week, it's the home opener of the 60th season. So people are just going to be even going more insane. I've seen on Twitter this week that they're painting the field to look like the original stadium, the Chiefs and Old Municipal Stadium's field. That's just a fun fact, I guess. But that's just something people are going to lose their minds about even more when they step into the stadium. So after last season especially, people are just going to go nuts, and it's going to be really hard for players to hear what's going on because fans are going to be screaming their heads off if they're punting the ball. It doesn't really matter.
Yeah, that municipal stadium field has an unbelievable history to it in the pre-Arrowhead days. Okay, so Arrowhead came around or not in 1971, right? Sound right?
71 or 72.
Okay. So before that, when they played at Municipal Stadium, the Royals played there also. And before that, the Kansas City A's played there. And some of the things Charlie Finley did to move the fences around in that place and make them like Yankee Stadium, all that hilarity that went on in the 60s there, just some very funny, funny stuff. So anyway, I encourage anyone to research that about
One time, Charlie Finley actually had forced the public address announcer to announce that ball would have been a home run in Yankee Stadium every time a ball was hit where they had an imaginary white line, that they would not allow him to change the dimensions to be exactly that too. And the Minnesota Twins hit 5 home runs in an inning, and they announced it all 5 times. Of course, that ball would have been a home run in Yankee Stadium. And the practice was discontinued the next day, as the story is told by Bill James. So anyway, a great one. For my true trips to Arrowhead, I'll say this. I went in 2006 and in 2010 for the playoff game as well. The fans there are very nice. They're right up there with the Nashville fans in terms of being really just very sweet people to opposing teams. It's not a conflict you're going into like you would if you're going to Cleveland or you're going to Oakland and places like that, which are not nice places to be an opposing fan, frankly.
Oh yeah, no, you're exactly correct. I was at the AFC Championship game last year, so you know we lost and everyone's just got their hearts ripped out. And of course, there's some intoxicated Patriots fans there trying to rub it in everyone's face. And, mm-hmm. Shocker as that may be.
Yes.
the classy New England fans are apparently weren't there.
Mass holes.
But so basically what there'd be a guy, oh, yeah, going to another Super Bowl. And, the Chiefs fans are just hanging their heads a little bit. And in your case, you would hear a. Well, I hope at least you guys win it. It's just like that's just like the most Kansas City Midwestern way of accepting a loss. You're like, we're mad inside, but we're going to internalize it and hope the team that beat us wins the championship so we can say that.
There you go. Yeah, great fans. One of the nicest places to visit.
I like that you're saying that the fans will be excited because of the way the field is painted. Because we just went through that in Baltimore where fans were just super excited that they painted the shield at the 50-yard line after years of not having it. And it seems like something really silly, but fans really got hyped up about it.
Oh, yeah. Stadium aesthetics in football anymore are just as important to what uniform you're wearing. I mean, you had people freaking out about the Jets wearing black on Monday mm-hmm. night. For us, we have a traditional uniform, so we don't get anything like that. So it's for us, we have a different field this week. That's right. Awesome. And people just love to see it. And it's one of the great things about, celebrating our 60th anniversary.
All right. I want to close out the mailbag with a question from Chip, who commented over on filmstudyravens.com, who is wondering your opinion on Greg Roman this year being up in the booth and how that's affecting things.
I don't know how much it really affects things. Obviously, it's a better sight line for Roman. It adds a relay element to the calls. Roman is obviously very comfortable in terms of the installation of this offense. And he, of course, wasn't the offensive coordinator last year. So while he was the run game coordinator and a guy who did have a big input into the game plan, he wasn't the guy calling the plays. That was still Morningwig last year, and he did it from the field. So I think the aspect ratio is probably good. For Roman, he's got a position that he's more comfortable with. I think that's the most important thing. It may also be, and I've always noticed this, whenever they do any kind of sound from inside a defensive or offensive play calling area, that there's a group of people around him who obviously are communicating various things to him at the time. The one example I remember seeing this was the Jets game from 2004, which is the first installation of what would later become Sound FX. And the guys who were up there with Nolan were just kissing his butt constantly the whole game. It was just a bunch of sycophants. So I wonder if Roman, though I'm assuming that's not the case, but for communication with his other assistants, it might make things easier to have them all in the booth there.
Not to mention computers and graphs and all that stuff.
They're not allowed to do that.
Even in the booth?
Yeah, they're not allowed to have computers on the headset loop, was my understanding. Now, that may have changed, but I got that from Matt Weiss a few years back. And in 2011, that was true.
Gotcha. I know that I imagine it's advancing where soon they'll allow it. I was shocked to see there's now iPads mounted inside the dugout at Camden Yards for some games.
Huh.
Where they were watching a film and they had left-hand batters, right-hand batters, 2 separate iPads mounted so they could watch them in between innings. So, all right, remember, get in your questions after this game this weekend using the hashtag FilmStudyMailbag on Twitter or commenting over at FilmStudyRavens.com. Will, thank you for joining us today. You've informed me an awful lot about the Chiefs. I'm sure our listeners as well as we prepare. Again, your Twitter handle is at Big12FanWill. Anything else you want to plug or anything before we get out of here?
I'm good on plugs. Thank you guys a lot for having me on. It's been a blast.
Yeah, great having you, Will. Love to have you again the next time they play the Chiefs, and we'll talk about that when it happens. Always have appreciated these Know Your Foe episodes. Hope people will give these a chance in the future. Go out to FilmStudyRavens.com, and you'll see some past ones if you like. More fun, obviously, to see the ones coming up. That's why we do them now during the week. But there's plenty of other content out there as well. The defensive and offensive line articles, some new charting that we're adding. And one thing I want to get people to do is look at an old video I did that has an explanation of the Ravens' defensive packages and give that a try as well. So please give us a shot on the site. And if you leave comments there, they'll certainly make it to the mailbag. If you leave them on Twitter with the hashtag FilmStudyMailbag ID, then you'll get them that way too.
All right, guys. We've got, 3-4 days until we get to see this matchup, so a nice time to just kind of sit back and prepare. We've broken it down. Now we get to see what happens on the field on Sunday. So enjoy the rest of your week.
Guys, it's Mike. As you know, I adopted my pup, Rocky, from a local rescue. Now, when people asked me what kind of dog Rocky was, I was always stumped. I used an Embark dog DNA test to decode my most puzzling questions about Rocky. You can also learn about your dog's inner secrets with Embark, the highest-rated dog DNA test. Unlock over 350 breeds and screen for over 200 genetic health risks. Save $50 on a breed and health kit with promo code KIT at EmbarkVet.com. Again, that's promo code KIT.
Introducing the Lowe's List for Innovation. While our aisles are filled with innovative products, we've selected our favorites just for you. Like the exclusive Whirlpool washer with industry-first 2-in-1 removable agitator. We love this washer because you can customize any load. And with other smart features to streamline your laundry routine, this product is a must-have for families. Shop the full Lowe's List of top picks at Lowe's.com. Lowe's, home to any budget, home to any possibility. U.S. only.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.